people and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjo, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey guys, welcome to Shift and Steer.
Why me?
Great personality.
I love that.
As you guys can tell, there's a lot going on. We're here at the MagnaFlow booth, recording Shift and Steer here at the SEMA show with Aaron Hagar is here.
And
we're here with Richard Waitis from MagnaFlow. It's good to see you again.
Always good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
You're good.
And we thought it would be good to have Richard on the show because, you know, we've been talking for 3 days and we're just going to let Richard do the show solo. Yeah, so go ahead. Congratulations, though. SEMA show. So this is kind of a SEMA recap for us. We're still here. Brad, as you guys know, is running around back and forth in Arizona taking care of family business. So this has been an interesting sort of lay of the land. As far as SEMA itself, I want to say this is maybe the first year back with international buyers post-COVID.
So I'd definitely say the traffic there for international buyers has been...
Yeah.
And I would even say, looking around the booth over the last few days, that it's up and even maybe higher than it was in maybe like 2019 times as far as international goes.
Yeah. So... when they brought SEMA back after the COVID lockdown, they did like 2 years of no international buyers.
That's right.
Right. And
wait, I got to be a woman injector. Yeah, that's right.
And it thinned out the herd a little bit. Now, the one thing we've been kind of all talking about, I think, maybe all three of us and other people go, if this is a trade show event, why are there so many people walking around with like posters and signings, and I was like, how trade show could this be? And I'd like to say the public is sneaking in, but it's not. And no offense, it's the exhibitors, and the exhibitors are signing up and going, we need 12 passes to the SEMA show. And they go, your booth is 5 feet by 5 feet. You do not have 12 employees coming to you're working the show. Like you get friends, you get family, you're coming out here, you're in Vegas, you're dragging them out here for the week. You're bringing them to the SEMA show. And so it's kind of an interesting event. I know you guys still work here. I mean, a lot of people work here. I mean, work as in like take the meetings and get deals done and distribution deals and stuff like that. But I don't know, maybe like for a company like MagnaFlow, it's more like meeting up with the distributors that you already have. You're not really signing like a lot of new deals. You don't need to.
Well, I mean, in this market you look at today, who in this digital world is waiting for a single day a year to meet somebody to start business? I mean, things are never happening on the same patterns that they were when I think the show started. You know, we used to have a season when, you know, spring and summer came out. That's when cars came out. So everybody expected to buy cars then. You know, the SEMA show happens shortly thereafter. It was kind of a cyclical thing, and it was very predictable in that sense. And we used to have customers that were, you know, brought to market because, hey, here's the new version of that car, or, hey, we're in the new release segment. So these companies are going to be putting together new products to release and talk about. So it made sense in the timing. But today, I mean, God forbid, supply chain problems aside, we don't really know when cars are coming out anymore until we're told. And they can happen anytime. There really isn't a season, so to say,
yeah,
the stuff's coming out. And same thing with when travel is, you know, or we're going wherever we need to go, when we need to go, if not doing so with like a Zoom meeting or something else remote.
Yeah, the lay of the land has changed. We've been talking about, you know, for even a couple of years now on the podcast of just, you know, cars are getting debuted at different events, and it's Rennsport, and it's Monterey, and it's, you know, CES, and it's just...
But I gotta say, SEMA's got a good feel this year. I don't know about you guys, but it's been a wild ride. It kind of feels like the old SEMA, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I always like it. I'm a aftermarket parts super freak, right? So, I mean, Friday is like... I mean, Friday's going to be I go around and get more photos, but I go into the new parts area, the new products area, and I like to walk the aisles and just kind of get a, you know, a quick glimpse of what's going on out there.
And without the big manufacturers here, we're not seeing a lot of those new cars, and we're seeing aftermarket accessories on newer cars, but we're not debuting. Well, I guess Toyota has a few out there, but we're not really debuting anything new as far as manufacturers go, but it's a product show. We've got plenty of that here.
Yeah.
Really unique builds.
So let's talk a little bit about SEMA before we get into all the other antics we've been up to, if we're allowed to do those things. But lay of the land, what have you guys seen that has piqued your interest? You found anything cool? Have you walked around yet, Richard?
It's Thursday, which means I haven't left my booth yet. So
yeah, do you get
from the 5 days of prep up until now?
Yeah,
I've seen booths unassembled and vehicles not parked and products under a visqueen. But yeah, I still, Friday's my day, so I'm going to go out and kind of experience what it is when the crowds die down, and it's kind of known as the consumer day, so I came out with the SEMA Fest thing, and you can buy a ticket as being non-vendor exhibitor anymore, so I can go out and just be one of those people and look around and enjoy the show as it was a car show.
If I get recognized every 10 feet, you are going to get recognized every inch.
It's an interesting place to be, but I will still say it's when it comes down to like walking the show, I like to go through, and I kind of miss seeing the OEMs and being present there, but I did catch a few interesting cars. That Toyota, I don't know if you guys got a chance to go look at that. They have that FJ Bruiser out there. Crazy motor, tank track belly pan, so you get caught up on the rocks.
Yeah.
Tons of innovation. And that's the kind of stuff, like, when you were mentioning OEs, and even if it's not the next upcoming car, it's always interesting to see when you have those mega budgets, what can you do from an innovation standpoint? And that's really what I try to enjoy at SEMA, is who's bringing something new to the table and how are they presenting it to us in a, mm-hmm. in a way that, you know, we can relate to it. There's just a lot of stuff that comes out in the world today, which is a little pretty bolt on, you know, the consumer market wants and demands to have stuff that they can put on themselves, but I like seeing that really custom touch.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been some interesting things in both the parts and the cars, right? The cars, you get the big builds. If you guys go back and listen to CarCast, we're going to do a nice long conversation with the Ring Brothers. They brought out three cars. They have a Charger, I don't know, 68, 69 Charger with a Helifant engine in it. It's like a Ringling Brothers car. And that one is, it's gorgeous. But again, you look at it and you go, hey, this is great. What'd you guys do? And they're like, well, you know, the vents on the fender, which weren't, they were in the door and now they're in the fender and they weren't functional. And now they are functional. And, we always thought the front overhang on that was too much. So we moved the wheelbase, the front wheels were moved forward and, you know, how to make it work. And then, but that was an interesting car because that was actually a built car with a Helifant engine in it, and the client brought it, and he goes, let's do this car. And he's like, well, you know, it's done. Like, we don't want to screw up your car, and it's painted black and it looks nice. And, he's like, and they said, why don't we just go get another car? Nah, I already got this one. Let's just do it. And he's like, all right, because it looks like it was already a couple hundred grand invested into it. So they started over, and then Mike and Jim said, well, we've got this car and we're going to redo the whole thing. And they're like, I always wanted to like key a car. And so they brought the car in, and I think Jim had a screwdriver, Mike had a key, and they just down the side, just down the side, and he's like, ooh, gives me chills. And he's like, now we gotta build the whole thing and paint it. Yeah. That car was amazing. And it's over in the Ring Brothers booth, Richard. You gotta go check that out. And then on the other side of Toyota, the BASF booth, you'll see the white 61 Rolls Royce that they brought out.
I didn't see a peek of that when I came.
Yeah.
I have to go look at
it. It's gorgeous.
Gorgeous, and they didn't change the proportions of it, just the lines on the edge. They gave it a sharper edge on the lines. It's got a full Roadster shop chassis underneath. It's got a LT4 supercharged motor in it, 640 horsepower, and they drove it. They did a YouTube video on it. I think it's called The Bet. And because the client has like a Rolls-Royce Ghost, which is a quick car. It's big power, twin turbo, 12-cylinder. And he brought it over, and he's like, well, now that you built me the new one, let's race. And I mean, I'll spoil it for you, and I'll tell you that the old ones smoke the new one. But and they're both fast.
They got a bottle of Grey Poupon in there.
Yeah. And they got the Ring Brothers Grey Poupon in there. And they did just so many cool little trick things to it. But
yeah, the interior is stunning. And a little simplified.
I like simple.
Yeah.
So, and then you and I, Aaron, we went over after visiting Kicker. We saw their Mustang. They have a Mustang convertible called Uncaged. Yeah. Now, it looks like a really, really nice restored stock Mustang convertible, 65 Mustang convertible. And that car is widened, I think, about 1.5 to 2 inches.
Yeah.
And the way to do that, I go, hey, you know, you just cut it down the middle, right? It's like, everything will be wrong. Everything will be wrong. Yeah. So if you imagine the top of the fender and the top of the doors and the rear fender, that's what's cut, and it's widened at that point. So the glass, the interior, the dash, everything is stock size. And then the fenders are widened, but there's no fender flare. So you got more tire with no fender flare. And I go, but it's not that easy, right? It's like, oh no, door hinges, everything. Yeah. Like everything is,
Every cut, the taillights, make them more proportional.
Yes, and that was the other thing, is so everything is handmade. The end caps on the back fenders, the taillight bezels, everything has to be redone. The grill that was in the front, they actually make it deeper to give it more, because of the width of it.
Yeah.
If it was wider 2 inches, but the grill only had like 1 inch of depth, it wouldn't look right. So the whole thing had to be set back and deeper. Like
between all of the, through all that is just extraordinary.
I had no idea either until I saw
Chris's the Vicious Mustang. When
yeah.
First put that together, they did the same thing, and I had no idea that they would be widening it where they did. And it was that same spot. You know, they basically split it and bring where the headlight bezel is, and at the outer perimeter of the fender only makes the room you're looking for. But it also preserves, like you said, all those classic proportions, which I wouldn't even have anticipated.
Yeah. So that's another cool car, Vicious Mustang, which you've been over there with the C-Tech booth talking to those guys the whole time.
Now has giant fenders. And, you know, I don't even know.
It's been redone. This car was the all the red interior and the kind of the satin gray, was it?
It's black. It is.
But it used to be.
It used to be a satin silver. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just switched it. So now it's black with the silver stripe.
What happened?
I'm told that a truck was making a turn and didn't see it. I don't know the circumstances of that, but yep. He hit it, and then he didn't know what he hit, so he hit it again, and just took out the whole side. But mechanically, it was still intact, and you know, the chassis was intact. They just had to redo a lot of body work. So I believe it is a Dynacorn body, right, base, and then a lot of fabrication on top. But it is beautifully and exquisitely done. I mean, the paint and the surface on that are
yeah.
Breathtaking. I don't know how much he's changing in interior, but
it looks very similar. Yeah, it's the color.
Yeah, I think the interior is intact.
Yeah,
but that is a twin turbo and supercharged. And what supercharger? And like,
it's got like a Magnuson or something. Yeah, it's a Magnuson.
Yeah, but he called it something different. Anyway, but the way the ducting works for the turbos and you know, just the pressure release of the fenders, and but the turbos come into the side just in front of the door panel. Just go travel all the way down under the headlights, and then scoop back down, and then the air travels up and then feeds the turbos
yeah.
and the supercharger. I mean, just brilliant engineering in that car. And he drives it. He autocrosses it. He tracks it. He drives it on the street.
Which is why I got hit. I mean, it's pretty wild when he's
yeah.
much into that car. And he's driving this thing. I wasn't with Burbank area or something like that.
Yeah,
it was like
yeah.
some utility vehicle.
Yep.
I mean, I don't recall the full story, but the same thing that you heard is that multiple hits
yeah.
while driving on the road.
He didn't hear it? I mean, I know it's got turbos on it, but I mean, I've been around that car when he got on it a bit. I was like, it's...
Did you guys even ask
him? We had the same... The car builder that they use is Bill and Jason over at Timeless.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, they are builders who use our product and everything. Actually, the 69 Camaro that's in our booth right now for the Plastica Boys was built by them as well. And same treatment. You know, it's got custom muffler setup, custom 3H tubing, The guys over at Timeless know how our product integrates well in the car, and obviously this one, especially with the charge pipes and twin turbos, all that feed work, there is so much fab work into that.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful, too, because you can't see it. And what I mean by that is it's just fitting. Everything has a home. Everything's pocketed. It's the work that, one, Chris wanted, but, two, the guys at Timeless know how to do.
Yeah.
So, like, compact and low to the ground, too. I'd imagine the clearances on that stuff and getting all the plumbing and all. I mean, you have to. I mean, you're an amazing engineer with this stuff. How do you get all that to work? Because that is 1,000 horsepower with 800 pounds of torque or something. I mean, that's a lot of management.
Well, if you saw the build on the first version, normally, and I even say this to the world of OEMs, exhaust is a afterthought. That's why we have all these crushes and pinches in the exhaust system when we're underneath, scratch our head, how come this is there? It's because they got to worry about chassis, they're worried about all the other components that they have, and then they just put the exhaust in and make it work. If you're looking at a custom car at that level, you look at the guys at Timeless, and you can look at their timeline. I think on the website you can see on full build of Vicious One, you can see that the exhaust was being laid out while the chassis was there and there was no body on it.
Smart.
So it was part of the floorboard construction, so that's why it feels so integrated. But even body features, so the charge pipes for the turbochargers actually were so tall because of the position of the turbochargers that they put a hump into the top of the fender to accommodate the charge pipe. So it actually became a form and function issue where the exhaust affected that extra wide body by adding another line to that hood line. So again, a craftsman type of point of view with design starting all the way at the beginning rather than just simply trying to make it fit.
Yeah.
And that just epitomizes the whole build. It's like every detail is beautifully engineered, they're beautifully executed, and Chris uses it. So if you want to see all this, you can go to Autotopia LA and see it on YouTube. They've got great content of everything this vehicle and all the others do. Chris and Sean are just doing a great job with that. And definitely check that out.
Another car that I think stood out to you and I, Aaron, you'll see it. Oh, well, you've been seeing it from the roof of your booth, I think, is... no, it was not that. Although people were messaging me about it. They're asking, like, I don't know if they're asking me questions that are jokes or not.
Was it Rawlings adult carpet?
No, and I don't know enough about this car because we didn't get a chance to chat with them. But the Tucci's, well, the Mercedes, the 190 Mercedes, Dom Tucci. Yeah, I mean, that one is up for Battle of the Builders. But which, by the way, Battle of the Builders is a weird thing because it's great for the builder, but this is a question for you, Richard, I guess. It would be, you have a booth, you've committed to bringing in certain vehicles, and it's bringing people to the booth, and it's sparking conversation, and 3 days into SEMA, 2.5 days into SEMA, someone in your booth is up for the finals of Battle of Builders, so they come and take the car out of your booth. Right? So Tuesday it's there, Wednesday it's there, Thursday there's a sign that says cars over at Battle of the Builders. So like, well, you're the one who brought it here with the builder. So now Thursday and Friday you don't get the car in your booth. Now this isn't happening to you this year, but in the past, you know what I'm saying? Like HB Tuners, like, listen, they're a good company, but they don't have a huge booth, and they probably invested a lot into getting a Tucci car there, and now it's not there.
You can't have an inflatable car.
Yeah, like, what do you do?
Yeah, it's an interesting problem. It really depends on what you're here for, and I think that's something that clearly defined. If that is your feature car, that's going to be a detriment to your design on your booth. And in the case of, like, you know, our booth, we scattered it with about 7 different cars this year. And we have to have the square footage to accommodate that. And of course, you don't want something that looks like a big empty spot in your booth. But the reason why I'm here, and I have everything from a bolt-on Mustang that's a 2024 to, again, the Timeless Custom 69 Camaro to, you know, a trophy truck here. So all of those things, though, they represent segments of my market, and they're here for media purposes. So realistically speaking, there's a certain number of eyeballs we're going to get foot traffic-wise in here. But the Battle of the Builders is its own kind of production. It's going to have its own audience that's going to be separated from those people that are here. And it's kind of a trade-out. You kind of have to figure out what's good for the company. Do I want this to be seen by the general public, which I'm supposed to be here at CML, but we know there's some of that here. But they're going to produce a show. It's going to go on YouTube, and it's going to be available. So you're going to get the opportunity, as well as, you know, Columbus, of course, branded with some HP tutors on it, to have it seen by the appropriate people that they wanted it to be seen by. So it's a trade-off, and it's something you kind of have to plan into what is your booth presence here.
Yeah.
If that thing's a focal point of your sales and they've just removed it, that could be a problem.
They had to think that that was going to happen, that there was a chance it was going to happen. They had two cars in the booth. One of them moved out to Battle of the Builders. They put the other one in the middle. And I walked by this morning and I was like, this booth looks a little different. And I was like...
You didn't see the Renault Fuego?
And it was funny because I was talking to somebody else and the guy's like, what should I go see? In my head, I was like, Tucci's. I was like, oh, the car's gone. It's a Battle of the Builders. And if you're new to SEMA, you're probably not up to speed on what Battle of the Builders is, sure. So you don't know what happened where the car is and how to go see it. But anyway, just kind of a interesting thought. But it's a cool piece, and I'm sure it's going to get a lot of exposure. And we could probably get like Dom Tucci or somebody on the show in the future to walk us through it, because I know it's going to take a lot more than us just going, hey, did you see the 190?
And they're so passionate. I love those guys. And when we talk to them, it's the same thing. You know, we had this conversation earlier where a lot of these, with one of the Kindig guys, that you take a great example of what you're going to customize because you're starting with a better example of it. They did the opposite. They started with a really high mileage, beat to hell, rusty bucket.
Yeah.
They had to do so much rust work into this Mercedes.
You want a good jumping off point, yeah. And it's not. It wasn't.
It's like, I totally blew it on this car. It was a mess. Is that in 6 months to your build, you know? in gutter work.
I think the lay of the land is getting figured out. With West Hall, West Hall has a big presence with trucks and off-road and overlanding, and North Hall, a lot of the car audio and some tools and stuff, but they moved the new product showcase there, which I'm glad I noticed it.
Yeah.
When we were at Kicker yesterday, because we were up, because I would have been walking my ass down to South Hall where it was before, yeah. Going, where is the damn new product showcase again?
And it's right next to Battle Builders, right? So it's
yeah.
Insane.
Yeah.
It's really definitely nice. More visible in a different location.
And just the way it's lit too, it looks like a big museum exhibit. It's kind of interesting. You know, what is going on?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, they moved it here. It's like I got excited to see it.
So last night, I want to talk a little bit about that. Pete Brock does his. He's got kind of an annual house party with a handful of people, and. I'm always lucky to get an invitation from Gail and Pete to come out and see them. And, you know, we love Pete so much. Yeah, the history on the Adam Carolla side with the BRE cars and Shelby and all that, and what Pete has done there just is amazing. And then for you guys listening, I know you've heard the name a bunch of times, but Pete Brock was a designer at Shelby. And when Shelby went to Le Mans before the GT40s, they were running the Cobra, and the Cobra didn't have enough top speed on the straight. So Pete designed the Shelby Daytona Coupe, and as a young guy. Now, before that, he was out of school, out of the art center. He was a 19-year-old designer in the advanced design concepts department at GM. And in 1957... he started putting pen to paper for Bill Mitchell at the time on a sports car, sort of the evolution of what the Corvette could be. And what he put pen to paper on 57, which we saw last night, became the 63 split window Corvette. And I'm going to get some of it wrong, but it wasn't necessarily his design. He designed the split window because I think Bill Mitchell wanted the split window because he was looking at one of the French cars. I don't know, Bugatti or Delahaye or something, and had the
Bugattis.
And he goes, I want that on the car. And then somebody else at GM's like, absolutely not. One piece glass. It's got it. Absolutely not. And then when it went to the boss, the boss was like, stop arguing. This is what we're going to do. We'll do 1 year with the split window, and then we'll go out. Now, we always thought, at least in my head, the story was they did a split window Corvette. It was a great design, but obviously you can't see out the rear of your mirror, so they just fixed the glitch, right? But no, it was a straight up handshake deal. They go, you get your split window for 1 year, and then you get the conventional window the year after that. Stop arguing, end of meeting. Like, and it was so fascinating to hear that.
We hear this from the man himself.
Right? Yes.
We hear the whole evolution around and up to it. You know, we hear all the stories. We see all the line work in person, original concept art of this stuff. And of course, being an artist and illustrator, I was going crazy. I actually got very emotional. Matt was kind of laughing at me because I tend to do that.
Well, because I've seen it 9 times, but yes, I get it.
My wife giggles when that happens too.
But you know, Pete's 87. He's sharp as a tack. He works harder than I do, and he's in better shape than I am. So I'm not sure what's going on there. He at the end of the night, he was running after Kit Brock, who's the dog. Great. He was chasing Kit around the house. He was running after Kit, and Kit was going up the stairs. He's like, "Oh, she wants to go to bed." But yeah, so. These are, and I'll get some of the terms wrong, what the type of paper and the whatever, vellum.
And
they all look like they're kind of wrinkled pieces of paper and large format in frames in his hallway. And it was because it was all like crumpled up and folded in boxes.
Yeah, it was sketch art, literally. And only a couple were more rendered. It was really, really loose.
Years ago, Gail pulled them out of the box. She's like, "Pete, what are these?" He's like, "Oh, those are some sketches from back at GM." And she's like, and she's such a historian, and she's such an advocate of his story. She's like, "They can't just be sketches, Pete. Like, they got to be something." And, you know, and he unfolds them, and they're, you know, they're dated 1957. It's the concept designs for that. She's like, "Where did you get them?" He's like, "Oh, I took them." He's like, I don't even know if I was supposed to take them. Like, nowadays, it's like we're fascinated with that story, and the car companies love that type of story. But back then, everyone's like, "You can't just take it. That's our intellectual property." But now they're like, "This is part of the history, and we kind of love that." So she pulls them out of the boxes. She gets them framed. At some point, through some conversation, I don't know how, GM finds out that he's got these things, and he was always shy about it because he thought he was going to get in trouble. Right, he's like, "I stole, you know, pieces of paper from GM, and you're not supposed to do that." And, you know, and he's, you know, back then when he was working on it, he was 19 years old, right? So GM reaches out and says, "Hey, you know, we'd like to see them or use them or get them in a book or whatever." And he said, "I'll make you a deal." He said, "If I will send you these, you can copy them, you can publish them, you can do whatever you want. You send me back the originals, and then I'm allowed to publicly say that I have them and I can talk about them and tell the story. I don't want to get in trouble."
He drew them.
He's like, I kind of want like immunity on this deal. And they didn't know what he's talking about because they didn't really care that he had them. But he's been scared for 60 years that he was going to get in trouble. And they said, "Yes, of course." Like, because now it's part of like the story we want you to tell that. So he boxed them up, he sent them there, they scanned them all, they archived them, and they published a book, and they sent them back, and they're hanging on his wall, and he's got these original sketches from back in the day.
And the book is amazing too, and the book is so comprehensive just with the whole story and all the details. And he was just going through the book page by page, telling the stories around everything. I mean, we got hours with him just telling us all about the creative process of this. And
he's a pretty amazing person to talk to.
Absolutely.
I met him actually through a project about that Daytona when we did an overhauling with we had a vehicle that obviously it was a Daytona reconstruction from the guys over at Superformance.
Yeah.
And it was chosen to be one of the vehicles on the show. And they invited Peter Brock out, and it was with Chip. So he got to see some of the exhaust work we did, and to the point where he was like, "Okay, this is pretty interesting what you've done here, you know, how you were able to recreate the style, but with modern parts and whatnot." And same thing, that book, he signed a copy and gave it to me and sent it to me via mail. And it was just after appreciating the work I had done to try to recreate what he had done. So one of those very interesting people from an engineering standpoint that understands it's there, but also has that, you know, that heart to appreciate everybody who's contributed to either keeping the story alive or moving on to those people now recreating those images of the past again. So
yeah.
Really, really great dude.
He really is. He's a really sweet guy. And it was very endearing to have him take that time with me. I'm a stranger to him. You know, I really know him or met him before. And Matt was gracious enough to invite me over too. And it was really moving. Really, really moving.
I think, as a matter of fact, when he came to the set, I think he has a Mercedes 190E too.
Oh, does he? Really?
He might have. I don't think he's driving that anymore. He's.
Well, it had been a couple years ago when the episode of Overhauling was there, and.
No, it is in the garage.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did have it. Yeah, he did have that there.
He drove that from his house to Southern California to come out to the set. Like, wow. He likes driving his cars, which is amazing.
Pete's 87 years old. They're like, we just want to remind you guys, Pete's 87 years old. Because we're like, they're all shaming everybody else in the room because Pete's in such great shape. Is basically what they were doing. And I don't know, a few years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago when we bought the AeroVault trailer, he towed it and drove it out.
Yeah. Wow.
And I talked to Gail. She's like, yeah, Pete wants to deliver the trailer personally.
Does he know how old he is?
I don't think he does. I don't think he does. So he drove it out and then he dropped it off. We chatted for a few minutes. He told me some stories about the BRE cars that are always amazing every time he walks in. And then he's like, grabs a water, hits the bathroom, turns around, and goes back to Vegas. And he was by himself. He just did it by himself. Yeah. He was like, and he was only 82 back then when he did that. But whatever. And he's still. I love him. He's so sharp, and he has such a. It's an interesting thing. Like as we get older, all of our reflexes slow down. Our eyes slow down. Focus slows down. But with a lot of people. Things become sort of muscle memory, you know, like Carroll Shelby, you know, have a hard time walking, but when you put him in a car, he's doing donuts and he's just like, I'm not seeing what I'm doing. I can just feel it. I just know what's happening. And Pete has this about his, like we did the Hino truck and we painted it white and we got all the photos and we did the red stripes on it and we brought it to Monterey and he's like, oh, it's the Hino. He's like, I love it. And he looks at the red stripes. He's like, that's the wrong shade of red. And I go, Pete, you painted it 63 years ago. And he's like, it's not that. I'll send you a paint code. I'll find you a paint code. He's like, that's not the right one. He really does.
Yeah, so he can appreciate the exhaust and the build and all the details because he's looking at it from a designer, you know. And I bet Foose was going nuts.
Oh, and him and Foose in the same room when they start collaborating and talking, that's something I'd love to be a fly on the wall. You got to just listen to see how they were talking about old designs and what they would do to improve it. And then Chip put his own little twist on that Daytona that they rebuilt. And Peter scratching his head, looking at it, saying why he did this. And wow, that's an improvement there. It's watching those two and combine their efforts and making that car was pretty amazing.
Both those guys can put pen to paper and do a thing right now. The Daytona coupes, the handful or so that were made, Pete told me long ago that they weren't all the same. It wasn't like he said every time we made another one, he's like, I made some small little improvement. So if VIN 1 is different, whatever you call it, VIN 1 is different than 3 or 6, right? Like it's all a little different. And then when he went to Superformance and said, hey, you guys are going to do cars. They went to him, I guess, and said, we're going to do this. Do you have thoughts? And he said, there's a few things I always wanted to change on it that would make it a better car. So the Superformance Daytona Coupe is actually a little different because since every one of the originals was a little different, there wasn't like we got to stay 100% true to the factory, whatever, because there wasn't one. So he got to make a couple little subtle differences on that. Anyway, I just thought it was a another just fascinating story and a great guy and great to visit with him and get that walkthrough.
Morgan three-wheeler, one of the new ones.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to see it, and I went back out because he wanted to look at the Mini, and we were talking about the Mini because I saw the Mini Cooper there, and
And the Morgan was gone. I was so bummed.
We loaded up with the Mini Cooper, Tammy and I, and the two dogs, and Aaron was driving, and we just hauled it out to Henderson and went to Pete's house and came back. And it's a fun, super fun car. It's such a great tour.
I'll let you start the next story because you were on the receiving end of a good story.
Yeah, actually, and it's so funny. This is the world of automotive. You know, as big as the industry is, it just seems like the more you're here, the smaller it gets, and you find out how this web gets woven between all these people. And you know, last night, of course, you know, I find out, Courtney Hansen gives me a call. She wants to come out to the party we're hosting. And she's like, oh, yeah, Christy Lee's with me. And I got a couple of her friends. And I go downstairs. We got some wristbands. We go to hand it out. And she introduces, and I see Sam there. And there's a couple of people with Sam. You know, he introduces, here's, you know, Ben Collins. And doesn't tell me who he is. Just says his name. And he's a very humble guy, you know, shakes hands. And then, oh, here's my photographer and videographer. And goes about, you know, the introductions. And, you know, somewhere in this conversation, I find out that Ben is the Stig.
Yeah.
I've never met the Stig before. So I'm like, wow, this guy here, you know, working with a lot of the race community and guys that typically drive race cars and have that prowess, you tend to find they have a personality that matches. You know, they're the guys that like to be on the podiums and that, and very much so opposite. Ben, a very humble guy.
Yeah, very sweet.
Didn't really announce his skill set and whatnot. It was just a part of the conversation. But no big deal there. Sam's talking about the fact. He's like, you know what? Of all the things, you know, this is the Stig. He's never been in the back of a Mini Cooper. That's a really weird conversation, but whatever. And he's like, oh, no. We piled into a Mini Cooper on the way to get here. And lo and behold, I'm talking to Aaron today, and it's Aaron's Mini Cooper. Apparently, you were chauffeuring them all to the party that I was supposed to get them into.
So we had a fun night. My buddy Terry Madden invited me to this gentleman's shop. What was his name again? The builder?
Sosa.
The Sosa. Man, this shop, this gentleman, I guess it's a cousin team, some of the most incredible fabrication I've ever seen, the motorcycles. So I'm there with Courtney and Christy and Mark and just some great people. And Ben's there, and they're, you know, she wanted to go to the Cosmo and do all the stuff, so we all left. And I'm like, I'm just going to go back to the hotel. And then the boys, and we walk outside, and there's the Mini Cooper, you know, just being the Mini Cooper, and everybody's all delighted. And then, hey, speaking of, we're talking about the Mini Cooper story last night. So then Sam and Ben, and they're all like, hey, you want to go to the, drop us off the, you know, and I'm like, sure. So we all jump Mini Cooper, and I think we were bumming around for 45 minutes like maniacs. He's going, break in the corner, pull the e-brake, and it's going, woo, 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 you know. Is it an LSD? No, I don't know. Only one wheel spins. Then we get to the Cosmo, and it's like a slick surface, and we're just going nuts in there. It was just one of those nights that I got back to my room, and I laid down, and I went, what just happened? Yeah, I went, wow, this is a great SEMA.
And we were just talking about, hey, come over here, come say hi. Did you lose your voice yet?
Hey, I lost my voice. I lost my voice on Monday, but today it's really bad.
Since you're here, you're going to have to tell us what's going on with the show. You're going to get a season two. Where do we
got a season two. We got a season two. So we're doing 10 episodes, and we go into production next week. We'll be building 10 cars and trucks through to June 1st, and the show will premiere in August. This upcoming August. Motor Trend Plus, and we're selling the show internationally as well. I saw a lot of international fans here at SEMA, and the show is already airing all over the world, so I'm really excited about that. And we're building insane cars, and Brian Fuller is our new designer, and I couldn't be more thrilled about it. Not only does he build insane stuff, but he looks good, and he has an amazing personality. We are more watched by women than any other show on Motor Trend. And with Fuller now in the mix, I think we're gonna recruit even more female. And it's just gonna be fun. Brian and I have the same kind of, we like to work hard but have fun doing it. And I think that energy is gonna really carry us through this season in a great way. And you guys are welcome to be a part of any build or any reveal or come hang with us in Atlanta. We would love it. So thank you for letting me plug the show.
Thank you. We just dragged her and she's losing her voice. I feel bad. You're good. You can come and hang out with us. You can have some water, take a break now, kick your feet up. So this so far so good. So we got one more day of SEMA, and then SEMA Fest. We're gonna give it a try. I'm gonna give it a try. I'm gonna see how SEMA Fest is gonna go.
I brought a car here, so I'm
I got to tow it home and go retrieve a trailer from my friend Michael's house, and I'm going to be around all weekend just moving furniture.
Like we said, great lineup of cars. If you guys, I think it was CarCast a couple of weeks ago, we had a nice interview with Tom Gattuso. And he was telling us he was in charge of SEMA Fest this year. And it was great. It was a great conversation. He's like, yeah, we're trying to pull off this huge consumer thing. And it's a music fest and all these great bands. It's Third Eye Blind. And it's Incubus and Wiz Khalifa and Imagine Dragons and all this great stuff. And in the middle between the bands, it's Nitro Circus and it's Formula Drift and all this crazy stuff happening. And I said, oh, but what about the car show? Are you going to do SEMA Ignited? He's like, no, we're going to skip this year. I go, good, because we don't need that Link fiasco from season one. And he laughed, and he's like, yeah, that was kind of a shit show. When the SEMA Ignited was the first year they did the car show, where the cars all here in the convention center would, 4 o'clock on a Friday, close down, fire up the cars, get in a line, and do a car show.
Out of gas on the way.
Yeah, but the Link was too far, so cars were overheating, and there's so much. 4 hours of traffic, and no one had fuel because you're not supposed to have gas in the car here, and things were overheating, and it was a nuts thing. He's like, we're just gonna try to pull off one thing this year, see how it goes. So. I'm excited for them, and it's kind of this, it's not really meant to be a melting pot of trade show and consumer show. It's meant to be kind of two things. Like, it just so happens to happen, they want it to happen all in the same location, and Friday, when, as you said, Richard, where they have some consumer tickets for sale so you can come and visit the SEMA show, that's the only real crossover for it. But, I'm interested in it because I think it's an opportunity for this industry to reach out to a new, younger crowd and say, hey, we're not just the car stuff. Like, we do some cool stuff, and it's fueled by our passion of automotive. And hopefully, I've always said, give it. You'll understand this, Aaron, more than anybody. But in working with Adam, doing live shows, you got to give it 2-3 years before you kind of get your footing, right? You got to understand, So I don't think you get to not like it on the first year. You get to decide on year three.
Yeah.
Like, this is a cool thing and this is not a cool thing, right?
Yeah. It takes time to season this event.
Yeah. And we were talking about it last night. Like,
I can't even imagine trying to do
it. We were even talking last night about businesses opening and restaurants opening and going, is it good or is it not good? Like, you got to give it a minute and then you got to figure out and then you can decide if you're going to pull the plug on it or not. But anyway, that's...
Well, no one's pulling the plug on SEMA.
Yeah, no one's pulling the plug on SEMA yet.
We're just getting more amps, more power, more... bigger. Good job, Mike Spagnola. I got to say, our buddy Spag is... This is awesome.
Before we wrap up, what's going on? What's next for Magnaflow? Where do you go? You go home, you take a nap, and then what?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, one of the more exciting things at SEMA this year was our announcement of the acquisition of Camberg. And this is...
That's right.
Camberg Suspension's first year, albeit, 20-plus years they've been building the parts they've been building. This is their first time showing at SEMA. And, of course, under our ownership, one of the things that we wanted to do was bring them into the whole operation that is Magnaflow. So from displaying the vehicles to showing our buyer network, what they're capable of doing, the show is here to, kind of introduce them to the world that we've been here at Magnaflow for quite some time. And it's super exciting because they're bringing a different aspect of the business. While Magnaflow does support some of the race stuff that's out there, Camberg was founded in the racing world, starting with, the Rangers and really building parts that no one else wanted to build or could build and had success with. So their brand was built off of some motivation between Jerry and Jason on getting out to the racetrack and building something that won. And effectively, they built a clientele of customers wanting to buy what they did. did to recreate what they had, and pretty soon they were making other products that were bolt-on products for the consumer vehicles out there. And today, you know, we debuted an unlimited two-wheel drive, you know, 6100 series truck in our booth, and we're going racing. You know, well, that's a new
thing. Yeah, it's cool.
So
that's awesome.
Couple that to the idea that we're going to be driving innovation to new product lines. You know, we came out here and talked about some brake parts, you know, portal parts. These are all things to support the race truck, but eventually, these are parts that we're going to be able to trickle down into the consumer market. So pretty interesting in the aspect of where it'll allow us to go in growing our business as well.
And the portal stuff's really, you said portal, sorry, you said triggered. you know, I have portal axles on my Pinscour, you know, and so I'm seeing more, there was a truck next to me earlier, out front, I had the Jeep, and it had these modern portal axles on it, and I'm like, they're still using these? It's like, duh. I mean, there's some neat technology in
yeah.
there now, too, which I wasn't familiar with, so, yeah, I was looking at your rig outside going, ooh.
Yeah, the guys here have been dabbling in what would be for the race series stuff. Yeah. And really, that's the interesting part, is that a lot of these technologies that we find are derivative of older things that have been there, but now we're able to make them more precisely. Yes. We can definitely have quick change out. Yes. So these are gear reductions on top of it, so you can get some mechanical advantage. There's so many opportunities in what these early devices had that were quite bulky. You know, obviously, you've taken yours apart. Probably weighs.
No, thankfully, I haven't. I hear it's not good.
Yeah, lots of iron, lots of metal. We're displacing yes. with CNC aluminum, integrating them into actual parts of the suspension, just as a spindle. So we're getting modern tech and a new spin on an old tech that had valid operational aspects to it. And it's crazy. It's going to start off in, you know, trophy truck racing and end wow. up in consumer vehicles that you're going to see guys driving on dirt roads and going camping in.
So cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's appropriate, but I know I was watching TJ and a few others builds, and I noticed a new design on the mufflers where there's kind of a remote muffler tube,
Yeah,
I was going to ask you. I've been meaning to ask you about that. I was curious. Is that something we want to discuss, on or off?
Okay. So it's one of the things that we've done with all of our new products, and actually what you're looking at is a derivative of our latest Mustang products, the 2024 yes. Mustang. And that in and of itself is an interesting vehicle, the S650 versus the S550. It's a derivative vehicle. It's still a 5-liter motor, but it's got, you know, twin throttle bodies. It's got a whole new facade, so, you know, much more modern looking than the 550 was, derivative of its previous generation. And it has a distinct look, but it's really, when you get down to the engineering components, about 90% the same car with yeah. a lot of fine-tuning.
Yeah, it's a lot of carryover.
We were discussing it yesterday. Yeah.
And when it came down to the exhaust, we were a little disappointed that we found that a majority of the applications being released for it were the older application being revisited with new tip locations. That is kind of what you can get away with. One of the things we really wanted to look at is how to adjust the sound, and not just the sound as far as level, and that's something we've traditionally done, but sound in the sense of what the character is. And what we found is the consumer market has a little different appeal as the age group and the demographic of the consumers changed. We want something a little bit more raucous, you know, something that's got a little burble on D-cell. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit more character, and it meant going back to the drawing board and kind of redesigning what we had traditionally done for a muffler, and we've incorporated what you saw there, which is a Helmholtz chamber.
Okay, that's what that is.
And what that is it's an ability for us to cancel a particular frequency. Now, in its most basic form, we call them NDT, or no drone technology, a tool set that we have for that. And we do that to get rid of the drone frequency. But this setup, we wanted to attenuate frequencies to create different sounds. And we went back to the drawing board with new mufflers. And this is the first time in that Mustang that we've gone from an X-pipe to an H-pipe. And it was mm-hmm. purely based upon sound.
Yeah, it's going back to an H-pipe, right?
Yeah, I like an H-pipe sound, though.
Distinct sound difference. And really we did that to change the character. And then we coupled that to now having chambered mufflers. So going from our straight-through design that's typical with packing, we removed the packing so we can get a little bit more of that mid-range sound, and that expansion chamber allows for some of that character that's that cackle and pop. But we wanted to maintain that straight-through flow, so it still has our perforated core in it, just we've taken out some of the packing material and we've changed some of the frequencies with those NDT resonators. So it's pretty awesome that we've been able to take a car that would pretty much sound the same and give it a whole new character. And in that, we have our new competition series line that we use those tuning features to really give it a new sound. And this is a tough part. You know, you're oftentimes listening to these sound clips on your phone with this little 1 millimeter speaker.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really hard to recreate what you're going to get. This is going to be fully appreciated once you can actually hear these cars out there, which is why we bought one so that we can start touring it around and let people really hear what we've done differently and hopefully more in line with what we find that the current Mustang consumer is wanting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. I was watching Throttle, too, and I saw when they had one of their cars up, they were showing it, too, and I was like, Richard's up to something. I got to ask him what this is all about because it looks...
And some of the cars really cater to that personalization. Like, think of all the personalization built into the Mustang, even the S550, but even the 650 and the gamification now and all kinds of cool stuff fits with what you guys are doing, being able to calibrate it to a specific sound and even change it later on the, you know, you don't like it anymore, you want to change it up, or you do an event or a track day or whatever, you can change it.
Everything has disconnects. Like, much of what I saw wasn't committed. Like, it wasn't welded together.
Well,
we have, in the
X-Mod system, the ability to change out modules. So you can put it with the muffler or a straight pipe that we call our Extreme Delete. But this system also is the first one where we have the 2.3 EcoBoost and the V8. Both available with the active exhaust. So we've been able to, of course, integrate with, and again, you just mentioned it, the dashboard on that thing, the buttons that you have available to go from track mode to quiet mode to all the Sport Plus modes that are there. All of these customizations from factory, you already have four modes when you get the active exhaust.
Yeah.
And now you can do it on the four cylinders, you can on the eight cylinder. And now we have other options to even further that to get that sound you really want. You go to our more traditional X-Mod with two modes of a deeper kind of smooth note, or you go to our new competition series that gives you that very chambered sound, mid-range, a little more raucous. And we definitely say it's the more youthful sound that we're finding that the guys that are buying the Mustangs that are going out and wanting to create a personal character for them are looking for.
You say youthful sound. When I was walking into the show yesterday, I was walking with Richard Rawlings and your buddy Chris, Tall Chris, right?
Yeah.
And someone came by, and one of those mufflers went off, and I gotta say, I almost jumped in the bushes, and I'm like, oh man, I'm getting old. But it sounded good,
yeah.
You know. But it just came out of nowhere. It's like he just on that deceleration. You know, it was just like I didn't hear it going. It just went. It just like came out of nowhere, and man, I was like, they looked at me like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, I'm new to this. I live in Tahoe, man. I hear bears blowing at my front door. That's all.
Yeah,
I
that's the answer.
Snow blowers, you know?
Good point.
Well done, man. Well done.
Thanks for that. You guys are doing some cool stuff, and I love the Camberg integration as well. And I know you guys are working to bring a lot of that stuff in house. You get it all under one roof, which is great because now. Having that accessibility, I think, is going to be really key as you guys are able to develop some new stuff and fully test it. And
I think I need to get a Mustang.
Or we got to build some really cool stuff for a Gladiator 3.6.
Well, we definitely do that. In fact, I need, you know, I just upgraded the turbo and the ECU on my Defender, and now I'm being told that I have to free flow the exhaust. So
I think I'm my no guy.
Yeah,
have him look over that turbo. Have him look over that turbo insulation and that housing and stuff while you're in there, because there's been some turbo issues.
Yeah. I gotta say, it's running really smooth. I think a turbo Technics or something. It's in there.
Oh, Turbonetics.
The Turbonetics. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Which is better because it was cracking housings and stuff.
Wow.
It was,
my exhaust manifold cracked aside.
Wow.
Literally broken in half on a factory Garrett. So that one I have, and it's a hybrid turbo, a bearing turbo, and it makes little turbo noises, and it is smooth, and the power delivery is smooth, and I'm loving it. So I will drive it down to you.
It might even be interesting when you guys look at it, because I'm wondering if there's some sort of like physical stress on the housing, like is the exhaust hanging from it at a weird angle versus. You know,
a bad motor mount or some air on my part.
Right, it could be that too, like a motor mount, and now it's.
Well, there's a lot going on there, and you're talking about a turbocharger.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've all seen the videos of blowing turbochargers. That's stuff that happens above, you know, 1,300 degrees. So, Yeah. It's getting a lot of hot and cold exposure, yeah. And if there's something inside of that that's not being properly constrained vibration-wise, or even just as we were talking about with Matt, was the idea that maybe it's heavier and hanging off the wrong way, all that stuff can lead to some pretty radical failures.
Well, I'm just going to say I'm guilty.
Rich just went from "we can fix that up" to "you're gonna have to leave it for a few days."
Yeah. I'll tow the Mini Cooper behind.
Tow the Mini Cooper behind. That's been the trick the whole time, is tow the Mini Cooper everywhere.
No, I didn't say this on air. I told the gentleman, but I towed the Mini Cooper behind the Jeep. Now this is a real vintage Mini Cooper, folks. So it's a little. They're basically 5x5x10 feet. They're very very small, very very small. And I towed it on a 6x9 foot garden trail. Literally a flatbed garden trail. My combined weight, including the trailer, is 1,700 pounds.
Yeah.
I think the water in my water tank weighs more than
that. Weighs more than that, yeah. Certainly the rig on it.
Or apparently your lawnmower.
Yes, but hey, we got to play around and drive the Stig around last night.
Yep.
So it is legendary. The legendary Mini Cooper just got a level up.
I think we're going to wrap on that. We're looking at the clock. They're going to make the announcement saying SEMA's closed and everyone has to get out. So we're going to... we're going to wrap it up. Richard, wow. Thank you so much. As always, we love your hospitality and all of your support for all the stupid shit we build.
He's got the
business. He does. Magnaflow.com is the website, and Shift and Steer is our website. And next week maybe we'll have Brad back and we'll get more into it.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com. We'll be right back.